This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
G&D on the Fan, getting ready for a Beltway Blitz.
The DMV's football team has a bright future. It's time for you to plan your future as well. This is the exclusive sponsor of our show. The law firm of Condori and Morod can help you update your last will and testament or set up a trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Tell them that Grant and Danny sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
We've got tickets to the Caps and the Penguins, as promised. Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. You're winning two tickets to see the Capitals take on Pittsburgh. We hate Pittsburgh.
Yes, we do.
They are the arch rival of your Capitals. That's always a really good environment. If you haven't been to many games, you got to get to that one. For tickets and the complete schedule, visit thefandc.com/events. Austin Eckler is on the show at 5 o'clock. Let's get to our Beltway Blitz. And to talk about the Caps, the voice of the team on the radio, our buddy John Walton, to get it started. Five straight wins, games 2 through 6 of the season for Washington. And then they ran into a bit of a buzzsaw in Tampa Bay on the road on Saturday, John. What went wrong in that game? Because that was probably the least competitive game they played since game number one.
Yeah, I think when you look at the offense, you say, okay, they didn't score any goals. But Spencer Carberry, after the game, was largely pleased with process and even with talking with him before the game here tonight. Don't think that he had a whole lot of issue, except for the fact that they just didn't get a lot of second chances against a very good goalie. Andre Vasilevsky, couple of Stanley Cups and a Conn Smythe on the resume, so no shame in that. But as I was joking around with Spencer when I was in his office earlier today, doesn't get any easier tonight because you get Igor Shesterkin. So back-to-back, two of the very best in the NHL, and they're going to have that same kind of mindset, create those second chances against the Rangers tonight.
How much tweaking would you expect that this group does, John? Or would you like to sort of see them fold some of these new players into consistent spots for a while and maybe see how that goes? Like early on, moving Ovechkin to the right wing, for example, then he kind of found his way to the left, I think, throughout most of play. But even still, you see Coach Carbs sort of moving guys around a little bit. Does it feel like we're settling in?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, three of the four lines have been pretty constant since the second game of the year. The big change for tonight is Hendrix LaPierre is not going to play. He's a healthy scratch. And they brought up Michael Scarbosa from Hershey. And what the coach is looking for there is just to be able to have a little bit of intelligence to be able to jump in and say, look, this is what we do. Don't try and do too much. He's got great wheels. I wouldn't say that he's got a ton of offense in his history, but you know, he's somebody that with some speed with Vrana and some speed with him in the middle, and Andrew Mangiapane has shown that he's got to be able to put on the Jets a little bit too sometimes. So I think when you look across the board, that's the line that they've got to get going. That's the where you've got to kind of make sure that you've got some things that are changing there for the better. There just hasn't been enough offensive production there yet. I think by and large, second line's probably been their best when you've got Wilson and McMichael. They've been so good together. You know, Protas has shown a lot of promise in being with Ovechkin and Strome. And the fourth line, I love those guys. I mean, Brandon Duhaime coming in and watching him bang around. And Taylor Radish has got a couple of goals. So they're getting contributions from across the forwards, but they're going to have to get a little bit more from that third line. Hopefully Scarbosa can help them tonight.
You mentioned Igor Shesterkin, what an assignment that is. What about the rest of this Rangers team? They're fast. They score a lot. They've been a pain in the butt for a couple of years. They only seem to be getting better and better.
They are, and Artemi Panarin leads the way, so he's your first-line left wing. Alexis Lafreniere is the number one overall a few years back. He's taken a long time to get to this point, but signed a big new deal last week, and now point-a-game guy. And Vincent Trocheck, he's a Pittsburgh native. You guys were talking about we don't like Pittsburgh. Well, they didn't like us either, and Trocheck grew up there, and he always seems to play some of his better games against Washington. So he's a part of that top line, too. And then when you come back with Kreider, Zibanejad, and Riley Smith, that's a really good top six. So the Caps defense as a whole is going to have to be really good tonight. Matt Roy, by the way, guys, is getting a lot closer to returning. He skated today and is still the no-contact jersey. The reason they need him back is they got to ramp down Carlson's minutes a little bit. He's their number one D. You've got to, by necessity, get him out there, but you got to be able to get those minutes back down a little bit. It's a long season for number 74 to be logging the kind of minutes he is, but tonight against that top six, he's probably going to be.
John, what are you seeing from Ovechkin? Obviously, just, you know, I was watching some video of him, as I do sometimes, going on memory lane, of some of the young bull in a china shop. It's like slap shot, 10 hits, one Russian trash talk per shift on average. Now it's like, obviously, he's a different player, but what are you seeing from him so far?
You know, by and large, I think pretty good. I didn't see a lot from him opening night, and then after that, I was like, okay, it's coming. There's some hits. There's some, shot attempts, getting some pucks on net. I think the back-to-back with Philly was tough in that second half for him, and then nothing was working for anybody in the Tampa Bay game. So I think after a couple of days, this is the kind of game with, big stage. ESPN is here. The team that put you out of the playoffs last year is here. So this smells to me like something where he'd say, okay, after, a couple of days, it's like the rest of us. I mean, you're getting older, you got to be able to have maybe a little bit more rest in between. I don't think he's any different. But I think this is the kind of game that he can really do some things, and hopefully he does tonight.
John, we will see you tonight. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
You bet.
Thank you, John.
Caps looking to make it 6 out of 7 as they play a home game. That's a 7:30 puck drop, 3 hours, 15 minutes from now, right here on The Fan. Let's talk hoops. The Wizards got a win. And I think Chase Hughes just dropped, Clary. I'm not sure why, but we could get him back on the horn.
He's like, I don't want to talk to those guys, not them.
Monumental Sports' Chase Hughes will be with us in just a moment. But the Wizards last night beat the Hawks 121-119 for a team that's supposed to win around 14 games to start the year 1-2, Danny. You got to like what you saw. Kyle Kuzma, 25 points. Jordan Poole's been very good. Scored 26. Corey Kispert scored 21. And Bob Carrington leading the kids with 13.
Finding their rhythm with Poole on the ball. So him playing point guard, he's not as natural maybe a distributor as some other guys. So it was tough early for Kuzma to get some offense. They kind of found that way last night, and they were playing off each other really well. I thought the young guys really held their own last night. Really impressive.
Chase, what'd you make of the win?
Well, I thought it was a very impressive game compared to the first two, because I think they were playing a pretty good offense that Atlanta has. And the first two games against Boston and Cleveland, who are obviously superior teams, they couldn't keep it up past the first half. And in this game, they were able to sustain it further. And I think the most impressive thing to me was their defense on Trae Young, specifically Bilal Coulibaly's defense on Trae Young. Now, Trae Young was coming off a back-to-back, and, obviously his legs were probably tired. It's early in the season, but Bilal Coulibaly did a tremendous job defending him. In their one-on-one matchups, he held him to 0 for 7 with 5 turnovers. And for the game, Trae Young was 2 for 15 and 2 for 10 from the field, from 3. And the big stop came in the closing seconds as Bilal Coulibaly, forced a missed 3. And they barely won the game, and I think his defense was a big reason why.
Yeah, Trae Turner did not score in that game, Chase, to your point. No, shtick aside, that's all I wanted to ask you about was Coulibaly on Trae Young. I was blown away. So the idea of Coulibaly to me is the flexible defender, can guard 1 through 4. You could switch him on everybody with, an offensive game. He'll punish you if you leave him alone. That was another level last night against Trae Young. I was wildly impressed.
Yeah, and as we've seen so far, it's not easy to do that. He's taken on some really tough defensive assignments beginning in the preseason. He defended Jalen Brunson, and then on opening night it was Jason Tatum, and then the game before this it was Donovan Mitchell. And, he's had some varying success against those guys. He actually defended Jason Tatum probably the best of those three. But this was the first time this year that we've seen him really shut somebody down, especially a really good player like Trae Young, who, is usually a walking double-double, can get you 20 points and 10 assists. And they assigned Bilal Coulibaly to him, and he was all over him. I mean, even on inbounds, off screens, it didn't matter. Wherever Trae Young was going, Bilal was following him. And obviously he's got a big size advantage. He's 6'7.5". Trae Young is about 6'2". But Trae Young's very quick. He's very crafty. So I think it definitely showed the evolution of Bilal Coulibaly as a defensive player.
Chase Hughes, Monumental Sports on our Beltway Blitz. I look at this team through the prism of where are they going to be drafting? And I want Cooper Flagg like everybody else does. But have you looked at all into this draft class? Is it kind of Flag and then nobody else? Or are there a few guys that are considered maybe 1-1s in last year's class that are going to be coming out?
Yeah, it's definitely not a Flag and no one else. Cooper Flag looks like he could be a uniquely gifted prospect, especially in terms of his size, his athleticism, and his two-way potential. But he's not the only one. There's probably five or six guys in this class that would have been in the conversation for the number one pick this past June. It's that good of a draft class. And, you have Cooper Flag at Duke. Rutgers has two players
kids
who could go in the top five. They've got Ace Bailey, who's probably going to be the second pick on a lot of mock drafts at this point. He's a similar player to Cooper Flag, so it wouldn't be all that surprising if he ended up being the number one pick. He's about 6'8", and plays a similar game. And then Dylan Harper, who's the son of Ron Harper, is off to a really good start at Rutgers as well. You've got VJ Edgecombe at Baylor. And there's also another French player, a big surprise, of course, a point guard, Nolan Triere. So it's a deep draft class at the top, and I think the Wizards, as long as they get somewhere near the top, they're going to be in pretty good shape.
Chase, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me.
We will see you, pal. Hit that local 53 sounder. Sadly, that's going to be the name forever, but the team is good, so I will deal with it. Our buddy Nick Ackridge joins us to break down the local 53. Nick, they're 6-2, so are a few other teams. How good is this team really?
Yeah, I think they're very, very good, and I think they're for real. I didn't think I was ever going to say that going into this season. But yeah, man, they're for real. I think their running game paired with how well Jaden's been playing and their defense really kind of stepping up recently, I think they're a legitimate team that can make some noise maybe in the playoffs, which, again, it's just wild to say.
I agree with you, though. I'm also saying the same things, and it is a strange thing to say out loud. If that's the case, they should be aggressive at the deadline next week then, right?
Yeah, I think they need some help in the secondary. I think that's pretty obvious. You've got some picks. I mean, you've got a nice third-round pick from the Jahan Dotson trade that you can kind of shop out there. And I think the idea of, maybe not going all in, but, continuing to build up the core of this roster, I think isn't a bad idea. And I think secondary is really where you should look, and maybe some pass rush help as well if that's out there.
So, Nick, why aren't they great in the red zone? Once you answer, I have a follow-up.
Yeah, it's just mental mistakes. I mean, we saw it in the Giants game as well. It kind of followed a similar script, other than the Hail Mary, of course. But, they get down to the red zone, they make these mental errors, pushes them back, gets them to first and 15, second and 15, and then it's just kind of hard to recover from that sort of spot. You're not in a position to really go for it on fourth down. And, yeah, it's really just kind of the mental errors that happen down there.
All right, so here's my follow-up. I've been kicking this theory around, and it's one of those that I feel like I might sound smart at a party if someone has no follow-up questions for me. So I'm going to give it to you, and I want to see what you think. I think so much between the 20s, a lot of it is schemed up. There's enough space where, Eckler in the flat is worth a lot more down there on their own 30 than it is, with only 5 yards to play. There's not as much room. I think they could really use one separator down there. Not a box-out guy like Ertz or not a guy like McLaurin that makes so many catches in traffic, but someone that can really separate, a.k.a. like an elite wide receiver down low when they get into the red zone. Is that crazy?
No, I don't think it's crazy at all. I think you see some of the best receivers really operate well down in the red zone because, like you said, they can separate quickly. And it's not just, being able to separate, but it's separating quickly, in that press man sort of situation. Because, as you said, everything down in the red zone is condensed. Everything it's smaller. Everything's tighter. The windows are tighter. You have to be better in every single area. And I think someone that can quickly separate off the line of scrimmage is kind of someone that really, really thrives in the red zone. A lot of times you think of, red zone targets as these big guys that can go up and make some big catches on the dreaded fade ball that rarely ever works. But really some of the best red zone threats are these smaller, shiftier guys that can win, immediately.
Excellent information as always. Thank you, Nick.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
You got
see
it.
Buddy.
PFF's Nick Ackridge on our Beltway Blitz. We asked him about the trade deadline. It comes up a week from today. With that in mind, what should the plan be? I mean, it seems like this team is pretty good. How should they be viewing the deadline? We're Grant and Danny. We'll get into the trade deadline for the Commanders in just a moment. Welcome back on G&D. Couple of things that just came out in the last few minutes or so. You heard Earl mention this. Former Commanders first-round pick Jamin Davis has a new home. The Green Bay Packers have signed him to the practice squad. He may well end up playing for them as soon as this week. Being on the practice squad just means that's how they got him in the building. He could stay there in perpetuity, or they could have him playing every week, elevating him. But I'm happy for him. He needs a fresh start. Ideally, an organization where he gets to play linebacker again, I would think.
Yep.
You just can't convince me that with his speed and some of his instincts and things, he cannot play at the NFL level. Around here, he had worn out his welcome, and I think fans were down on him because he was a first-round pick. And as a top 20 pick, heavy lies the crown, there's an expectation he didn't meet.
That's right.
But now he's just a street free agent coming off the practice squad. Anything he gives you is a bonus. And when you look at him through that lens, I think Packers fans will be a lot more accommodating to whatever struggles he might have.
So this is not the same at all, but it jumped into my mind talking about it. Years ago when Griffin left here, we were always talking about what's best for him, what's best for him. And to me, it wasn't to go try to be a starter on a bad team. That was going to doom you. To me, it was go to some place with the most established quarterback that you are not a threat to at all. Like I picked at the time, go to San Diego with Phil Rivers, who's not going anywhere. Mentor, study, learn, and reinvent yourself and work back up that way, right? That was kind of my suggestion. Sort of the same thing here for Jamin Davis. Don't go somewhere where the culture's bad or whatever. Be a special team Sam and dominate in that role at this point. And eventually work yourself to you know, put some good things on tape. That could be your role going forward. Or you could find some defensive coordinator who says, I know what you can't do, but I got something for you to do real quick.
Yeah.
I need you to go straight and go fast and hit. And he can do that.
Totally. I mean, that would be my plan if I just wanted to stay in the league for a few more years. If I want to be a starter and prove that I'm better than I was here, I think I want to be on the grass getting opportunities. I don't care if it's a good team or a bad team. I just want to play. Let me go out there. And
I get that.
Especially if it's a bad team and I can get on the field pretty quickly, I'm going to do that. But you can't go wrong with going to a winning organization. You're going to get to take part in national TV games, playoff games. They have had, for whatever reason, I don't think it's necessarily has anything to do with Matt LaFleur with his ties here, because nobody is still here that LaFleur worked with way back when in the Shanahan era. But they have had a propensity to grab some of Washington's players. So good luck to Jamin Davis in that regard. Another storyline I saw, this is via Albert Breer, who we have on the show a lot from the MMQB and SI. He is reporting that Ben Johnson this offseason, who, of course, Washington sought and at one point in time it seemed like wanted to make their head coach, whatever you think happened there, inevitably he did not become the guy. He's still calling plays for the Lions. He left them at the altar, or maybe they told him no thanks, but he called them while they were flying to Detroit to interview him for their head coaching job for a second time, and a lot of people think maybe to offer him the job. Not a good look for Ben Johnson. Well, Albert Breer is reporting that last year he wanted the Bears job, and it ended up not coming available. A lot of people thought they were going to hire a new head coach and fire Matt Eberflus. They stuck with Eberflus. But what's interesting about that is, obviously, if Eberflus gets fired this offseason, now if you're Ben Johnson, you would have the choice to go work with Caleb Williams and then that receiving core of Roma Dunze, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, those weapons. You might be able to dial something up there that you like. I don't know. Do you think he leaves Detroit, or is he persona non grata at this point where back-to-back years he's made teams look foolish and you just kind of move on?
It's my Josh McDaniels corollary. Someone's going to give him a shot. Someone's going to. Yeah, I just think it's good. I think that offensive mind is too good, and owners have visions of touchdowns and trick plays and people clapping like seals in their brains to say, we'll be the one to get out of it. We'll be the one to get this temperamental genius in line to coach my team. So, again, I keep pointing. Josh McDaniels got multiple chances despite clear evidence that he has no business being a head coach anywhere. He got shots. That guy, just for being a weirdo one time, turning down some interviews, I still think he's going to go.
Yeah, it's actually two times, though, now, if you think about
it. Seriously.
There's no precedent, really, for a coordinator being unwilling to leave, essentially, to continue to be a coordinator. So that's going to give some teams pause. There was also the rumors that he wanted second contract money on his first contract, which isn't going to go over very well with every single team either. I know this, though. All that guy does is call plays that work. I mean, that offense is an absolute wagon. Every time they touch the ball, they score. Now, Washington is every bit as efficient this year, and Cliff Kingsbury's done an amazing job, obviously. But I'll be fascinated to see what happens. But Breer reporting today that he was very interested in the Bears' job last offseason, and that will be something to keep track of as we go forward. Speaking of going forward, the trade deadline is 1 week away. We've talked about the deadline a few times over the last month. Now we're a week out. They're still winning big. They're still 6-2. They're beating playoff caliber teams. They're at the top of the division, and they look like a legitimate contender. Danny, they don't just look like a team that might be able to make the playoffs. They're playing like a team that you don't want to play in the playoffs. They're playing like a team that could go on a playoff run. I am now of the belief, more so than I've been at any point, that it would be a mistake not to try to upgrade this team at the deadline in some capacity. I'm not saying you have to go all in. They certainly shouldn't do that. But to not do something would feel like a mistake and a botch, because you're good enough to make noise in January. We're seeing that.
As we talked about last week, if I'm going to give up a really high pick of one or a two, it's got to be for something exceptional, not just a rental, not just this year, but I have a multi-year plan. That's my, you know, that's my Max Crosby, my Denzel Ward, whatever. If I can get a superstar for very little, or, you know, for a high price, I will do that just because that person's going to be here for some time. I don't think that's likely, but if that happens, great. To me, those around the edges type moves, the Deontay Johnson type move, where a guy in a bad situation could go somewhere and help you for not that much, for better value than a fourth or fifth rounder is likely to turn out to be, that's where they should be filling in the margins. And I think you can. It's a limited shopping mall. It's one aisle of the shopping mall. There are only a handful of teams that are fully, honest to God, out of it, no chance. And then everyone else wants those same guys too. So who knows? If a deal doesn't manifest itself, you don't do it just to hear yourself make a phone call, but you do it if the opportunity comes for a guy that can help you at a position where you may not be the strongest.
If they can make one move, or let's say it differently, if you ran the show ahead of the deadline and you were able to pull off one trade, what would it be? We can open up the phones right now on this at 1-800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067. One trade, that's all you get, ahead of the deadline next week. What position are you upgrading?
So all offseason, and even for parts of this year, I would have said one more really good playmaker at receiver. I just don't think that's their biggest need anymore. Like, I think in the red zone against good teams, they're going to miss not having a stud. I'm going to say pass rusher. I'm going to say somebody coming off the edge. Even though they've had great moments from Fowler, Dorrance Armstrong's had a good moment, Javonte Jean-Baptiste has shown very well, I need something else. I need a guy that on that 3rd and 8 in the must-stop moment can beat the tackle, disrupt the play, whether it's a sack, fumble, something special. There aren't that many of those guys that would really and truly upgrade things, but that's what I would hunt for.
You got to look at the list and see if that player exists, right? And if it's not a rental for the rest of this season, which wouldn't be my priority anyway, then it's got to be a young kind of ascending talent with term who's still controllable. Now, you know my stance on this from the conversations we've had on this over the last several weeks. I would not trade for a player that is a free agent at the end of the year. Because as much as I do think they can win something meaningful this season, that would not be my priority. That would be a nice side effect. My priority is to have multiple bites at the apple. At minimum, I need a guy that's under contract through next season. I would like a guy who has 3 years left even, something like that, on his deal. So with that in mind, I think, be doing a little more big game fishing probably than you are at this point. I would trade for someone like Denzel Ward from Cleveland if they're able to part with him and willing to. If they're in sell mode, which after giving up Amari Cooper, even after their win, I'm assuming they are, and Ward is on the table, I don't know that he would be. He's 27. He's in his prime. He's a sixth-year guy out of Ohio State, which, by the way, he'd be well-represented in this locker room, played with a bunch of the guys on this team, including McLaurin, I believe, at Ohio State. But I would go to him, and I would say, listen, here's what we think. We can pay you your $24 million against the cap next year. We're in a great situation. We are positioned to have you on our roster for the final 2 years of your deal after next year as well. So you could have 4 postseasons with them without reworking any part of the contract if you wanted to. You could also tweak the deal if you wanted to lower some of those numbers. But he's a 3-time Pro Bowler. He's an excellent player. So my answer is I'm upgrading corner. The player I would highlight in my perfect world is Denzel Ward. If that's not actually realistic, then okay, maybe Newsom on his own team would be the next guy that I'd look at. Greg Newsom, who similarly was a first-round pick, who's only 24 years old. They've already paid Ward, so if they don't want to trade him, maybe they're not likely to pay Newsom, who's in his fourth year and soon enough headed to free agency. And what I would do with him is I'd have him for a couple of years with the option, but I would immediately get an extension in place with him when I signed him. But corner is my play, and those would be the top names I'd start looking at.
I get it.
Think about how different this team is if you've got a legit corner opposite St. Just, who's been your two moonlighting as your one.
Uh-huh.
You kick San Ristel, who's playing well back into his natural position in the nickel, and Igbinoghene becomes your depth guy when you're taking on, you know, four receivers at a time or something, rather than being an every down nickel. The whole thing changes.
The whole thing changes.
Everybody is slotted down. You're asking a little less from each of those players that are all being stretched thin right now and who are out kicking their coverage to take on the matchups that they are.
Because there are going to be games now where you're a better team than Dallas, right? But CeeDee Lamb's over there. That guy's hurt a lot of people, right? That he is a tough cover for anybody, even if you've got a number one. Go to Philadelphia, right? Those couple of games are coming up. A.J. Brown is still A.J. Brown. And there are a lot of sleepless nights for a cornerback trying to deal with that guy. And then Devontae Smith's on the other side. We know that deal, right? So at some point, you're going to have to deal with, if you want to go somewhere in the playoffs, you're going to have to deal with Detroit and their offensive weapons. Everybody's got somebody that scares you or threatens you in some kind of way. So upgrading that area makes a lot of sense to me. But it's really about, for me, I think down in, down out, this defense maybe is more solid than I thought they were as of a month ago. I think that's given what they've done over the last month. But to me, there's still that lack of disruption. They don't have that, this is how you stop a great offense, where somebody's unblockable or someone you can't throw to that side, whatever, like that big-time playmaker.
The trade deadline's 1 week from today. First, do we agree that they should do something because they're good enough to win something meaningful? And then second, what's the one position you would upgrade? Danny says pass rusher. I'm going with corner. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Times. Williams. He's going to be taken down by Luvu or someone else, as it turns out, as he somehow broke that, but only lost more yardage as he tried to fight his way out of a jam.
Austin Eckler is on the show in 15 minutes. We'll talk about Sunday's Commanders win. We'll look ahead to the Giants as well. Grant and Danny, with you on the Fan, taking you up to 6:30 this evening. The Caps are live on the Fan at 7:30 tonight. The question for you, 1 week ahead of the trade deadline, if you could upgrade one position group, what would it be and what would you be looking to accomplish? The deadline is a week from today. Danny, you want more pass rush?
Yeah, honorable mention to maybe a playmaking receiver, but I would say a pass rusher.
For me, it's a corner. I gave you Denzel Ward, Greg Newsom from Cleveland as the top of my hit list. I want someone that bumps everybody down the depth chart at that position and ideally makes a bad corner room solid or a, you know, below average one average. And I think that difference in this team could be the difference in a playoff win or not. Let's go to Logan in Richmond on G&D. How are you, Logan?
I'm good, fellas. It's good to be talking to y'all.
Yeah, man.
Thanks, buddy. What's good?
So y'all both pretty much hit the hammer on the nail right when I called in. DB and pass rusher. But I started thinking about it, and honestly, you remember when they were doing that draft board and they had all those commander guys, quote unquote?
Yeah, the commander tag.
Yeah, you want that tag.
Yeah. Let's go get some of those guys, man.
Well, I mean, I'm sure they'd like to. It's a matter of, do they want to give up assets? Last year, they were preparing to lure a GM. It turned into Peters, and a coach. It turned into Quinn. And so they wanted as much money and as much picks as possible to sweeten the gift basket. They're going into this offseason with a great pick situation and the second most money, $100 million to spend again. Are they willing to dip into those funds? I think they should be willing, especially if you can get somebody controllable who's still going to be here after this season. Because it's just like signing someone in the offseason. You're just giving yourself one more postseason.
You're getting them a head start. Yeah. Like, I'll make up a name. Will McDonald, who's, I think, still on his rookie deal, has 8 sacks for the Jets. Now, they're not probably that inclined to part with him, but you might have to sweeten the pot a little bit. Maybe take on some bad salary. I mean, you've got creativity here that you could do something.
He'd be a difference maker. James in Woodbridge, what's all going on?
What's up, Grant? Danny, how you boys doing today?
Good, buddy.
Hey, listen, I am going to go back to Danny from last week. I don't know what happened to him, but it's all about offense right now, man. Dan Quinn, he's a defensive guy. Hofstra University, man, they'll get it locked down on defense. The offense needs either a big body wide receiver, an A.J. Brown type, or some other electric weapon in the mold of a Deebo Samuels. They're one piece away on offense that would make them lights out, because the NFL is offensive, man. I mean, it's great, but most defensive teams are not winning right now. You just need to have your defense be, able to shut down on occasion and let the offense cook.
You're preaching to the choir, for the record. I mean, these are the kind of narratives we've been pushing since the offseason, right? But they are number 3 right now in offense in the league. They're number 2 in rushing. They're number 4 in passing. He's right, though, Danny. As recently as last week, you were still on the go-get-a-wide-receiver train. It sounds like you've finally come to the side of they got – it's always good to have more.
Yeah.
It's great to have another. But they're moving the ball against good defenses. They are scoring points. They're the top-scoring team in the league going into this past week with their current offense. My point is I'm not bringing someone in and changing a bunch of roles and fixing something that's not broken. And maybe you're trending that way.
Yeah, it's my 1A. It's my 2 behind pass rusher. I mean, there was a third down in this past week's game where everybody was covered and it was relying on Zach Ertz to try to run away from somebody. And there wasn't much there. And Jay Daniels threw an incompletion. And I'm going, we're going to see. That's a thing. Like, come play. Now, that's one play. But it's kind of a microcosm or a window. That third down war daddy, that other guy that can win, good defenses will be able to go, we'll bracket Terry McLaurin and take our chance with everybody else. I don't want teams to be able to do that.
So let me be clear about something. You're going defensive end 1. You would, if they made a second trade, you'd rather it be a wide receiver than a corner.
Assuming it's an upgrade, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Now you've got corner 3rd. I can't imagine watching this team more than for 1 hour and not thinking, like, screaming corner 1st. It just seems like to me they're going to have a really hard time covering legitimate weapons as this year goes on. Let's go to Kevin in Arlington. What's up?
Hey, boys. So I will love it if we add one of any of the positions mentioned so far, because all of them are needed and will be upgrades to strengthen the roster. I love your slotting analogy, Grant. I see it often in hockey, what you're talking about there at the DB position. But to me, after Sunday, we have 3 offensive tackles banged up. Coleman, Riley, and Luke. And I'm sorry, Trent Scott, he is who I thought he was. He's a tomato can. Our precious commodity.
That's a good line.
Hey, he caught a touchdown. Okay? That tomato can's got a touchdown.
That's a touchdown catcher.
Yeah, good. He can be our 5th tackle. We need somebody going forward. We're only at game 8. So we got 9 more. We got 3 tackles banged up. If we can go get a young tackle, and I don't even say we have to trade him, but I think everybody's sleeping on that's a big concern going into Sunday and moving forward.
So I'm going to be a little bit hypocritical here and speak out of the other side of my mouth. That would be the one spot where I would not have a big problem trading like a late round pick or a nothing burger pick for just a rental veteran tackle.
Play that out, because the thinking is they've got it with Coleman long term.
Exactly. The thinking
right?
is I don't have a need beyond this year because Coleman's going to be my left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even really have a need this year if Lucas is okay. Like, we don't really know the status of these guys.
Yeah.
Coleman's only got a concussion and should be back theoretically, hopefully as soon as this week, mm-hmm. right? But the point is, in the event that Lucas's ankle thing lingers or the concussion comes back or whatever, you don't want to be in a position where Scott's playing a whole bunch. Fine, I agree. I'll give you a 6th in next year, and you give me your swing tackle who started 65 career games or whatever, who is a free agent to be, who's just a backup now because he's not very good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would do something like that. I don't think it's a huge need unless, and this is the big key here, unless this is a longer-term problem with Lucas and with Coleman than we originally thought with either of those 2 injuries. We've got Austin Eckler coming on at the top of the hour. We are looking for our question of the week for Austin from our listening audience, our fan question of the week. So you can tweet Danny or I at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. If you're in the 106.7 The Fan YouTube chat, you could send us your question for Austin Ekeler. We will pick one of those to ask him in our segment that starts right at the top of the hour on Grant and Danny.